Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Susan, it's good to see you.
Sharzad, it's good to literally see you in person, in the flesh. We're still a few feet apart, but we're in the studio and we're together.
I know.
And it feels real good.
It feels so good. This is the longest we've ever gone without seeing each other. And I, right before I, like, we were close enough, I said, are we hugging? And you said, yeah. And I was like, great. And then bear hug. But we are back in the studio. I don't have to hide in my bedroom to record the podcast anymore. And I'm so excited.
Same. Yeah. I'm really excited. I mean, our guests still have to do that. And I'm really excited about today's guest because she's one of my best friends. She has taught me so much about just life in general. She's shown me how important it is to have sometimes a bleeding heart is really the way to explain it, because she cares so much about other people and she's taught me the importance of that. And she's also, you know, it's really relevant to speak to her right now because she is half Black and she has two children who are also biracial. And I think there are a lot of conversations, very important ones, that we're all starting to have in our households right now. And I think she's, you know, she comes from a place of being able to see a lot of different sides and have really important conversations, you know, be able to contribute to these conversations. And, you know, she educates me on a regular basis. We've been besties. We met at Miss America.
I'm glad that you're, one of my favorite things to know is how people met. So I want to dive into that too.
Yeah. So we met at Miss America, you know, before I even get into that story, let me introduce her.
Yes.
By name. You guys, I'm so excited for you guys to meet Elizabeth Hunterton, her big girl name, because I call her Liz. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi,
Elizabeth.
How are you, ladies?
Oh, good. I wish that you were here in person, but you're coming to us from Vegas.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that we had that at least one day of shooting the sass together many, many moons ago where Susan and I were both pregnant.
We were both pregnant. Yeah. So we brought in Elizabeth to be our guinea pig.
For laser hair removal.
For lasers.
For different lasers. One for her face, Clear and Brilliant.
Oh, yeah,
and then
yeah.
We had her get her hair removed too.
I remember that. Yep. I feel like I know you because obviously Susan talks about you. I'm friends with you on Facebook. How did you guys meet? When was that?
We met at Miss America. So I was Miss New Mexico. She was Miss Nevada. And she always tells the story better than I do because she's just a better storyteller. So I'll let her take it from there.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I met Susan. So at Miss America, they line us up alphabetically everywhere we go. And since we were both in the ends, we would tend to hang out with each other. But our preach before Miss America, we went to Washington, D.C. And I'd said something and Susan made the crassest, most inappropriate joke. And I was like, I love you. and that's how it all started. And we have been close ever since. We worked together and, you know, lived in our different locales together. Like, she's amazing. But yeah, it started with a crass joke.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I like that. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Consistent, if nothing else.
So Miss Nevada and Miss New Mexico were reunited together.
Yeah, well, we got to stand in line together everywhere we went. And she had to hear me make jokes about everything and everyone at all times, whether inappropriate or not, because it's just who I am. And you know, I think we really became good friends later on, right after Miss America, you know, because when you're competing and stuff, you know, we were friendly and everything and got to know each other. But you really get to know each other after the competition is over. And she reached out to me at one point while I was, you know, in the middle of my journalism career. And she was like, I think that you need to join me in working with children that are at risk. I work for an organization called Boys Town. And she convinced me, she recruited me, her and my old boss together. You know, they did this whole thing where they came at me almost as if they wanted me to just be a volunteer. you know, they start to, they did, they got me. They took me to one of the houses where they, you know, where they had some of the kids, and they focus on at-risk children. And when I say at-risk, I mean, these are the kids that it's very specific to each location because it's all over the nation. But in New York City, specifically where I was, these were kids that were about to be sent to prison. And it disproportionately affects Black and brown kids and mm-hmm. poor kids. And you see that they just needed a little bit of direction in their life. And, you know, they just need to feel like they have a home and feel, you know, a lot of pride for who they are and know what consequences are and rules and, you know, just some of the basics that you don't think about. It wasn't hard to convince me, but, you know, I actually took a step back from my journalism career and had to do that by night. And so I was a People magazine reporter by night, and I was a nonprofit, I guess, executive by day. And that went on for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which made for long days because I would fly to New York and yep. all day we would work for the Boys Town Cause. And then she would drag me around New York City looking for different celebrities.
We would basically go live the life. We'd go out to restaurants and premieres and stuff and do interviews with celebrities or spy on them, you know, while they're having dinner, that kind of thing.
I was like, this is the only location where I'm working like 23-hour days. Like, you guys just don't stop. And why are there still office lights on in New York at like 3 a.m? What's happening?
Yep. It was a great time though, our 20s, where we just didn't stop working.
What a contrast though, from like working with at-risk kids to just following celebrities around.
Well, I think it becomes
that'll
actually
keep you humble instead of going absolutely fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, it's the contrast actually is what makes it even more important. I think when you know, I grew up in the country and I grew up poor in the country, but it doesn't feel that bad, right? You know, when you're just kind of living in this like oblivious kind of life, right? And everybody around me was living in the country, so they're not necessarily the most wealthy people either. Mm-hmm. But when you move to a big city like New York City, and especially when I was in journalism as an actual news reporter, you then start to see how different it is to be poor, to be, you know, Black or brown in, you know, a big city like that and be poor, and the things that can, you know, how it just changes your life from, you know, the thing that really stood out to me was you would cross a bridge in New York City, and the way people were living across a bridge was completely different than they were living in Manhattan. And it just really stands out to you. It feels like you're in a whole different world. You're like, what is this? How does this happen in a place like the US?
Yeah.
And it does. It happens all the time. Shahrzad, aren't you so happy that we get to actually be together again?
I feel like I'm having an outer body experience. Like, is this real or is this a dream? I don't know.
I know. You know, I'm so excited because now that we're starting to kind of loosen up things, and we're not in self-quarantine as much anymore. It means that I'm trying to get back on track in all aspects of my life. And that includes with my diet and exercise. So I have refound my Noom app. I kind of, you know, tucked it away and it's coming right back out because I definitely need to get back on track.
Oh my God, me too. I mean, I was having ice cream before 10 a.m., pot stickers before noon, chips. It was getting a little crazy. But anyway, I'm so excited to get on the Noom track as well because I really want to take better care of myself. I want to feel confident in my clothing again. I'd like my jeans to zip. Yeah. You know, that'd be great if I could zip them and breathe in them. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that. You guys, we've talked about Noom before. Noom is a habit-changing solution that helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. It's based in psychology. Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools you need to break bad habits and replace them with better ones. I really like that. You know, they don't focus on a specific
diet
number or diet. Mm-hmm. There's no foods that are necessarily bad or foods that are good. They just really encourage you to make positive changes for you.
And I think that's important right now because I think we all have to change our mindset again and relearn to be just normal functioning human beings again.
Mm-hmm. True. You guys don't have to change it all in one day. Small steps make big progress. You guys can sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/fam. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/fam to start your trial today.
That's Noom, Noom.com/fam.
You You have a pretty unique, I would say, childhood story.
Yep.
Do you feel comfortable sharing your story? And is this, do you feel like you've been so passionate about helping at-risk kids because of your life experience prior to working with them?
Yes. I mean, I certainly, when I would look at those kids, I could see so much of myself in them. Like what could have happened had I had to enter the foster care system? And so I fought tirelessly to help children. You know, in Vegas, it was primarily children who'd been abandoned, abused, and neglected, all of which I had been. And so if you look at my story from the beginning, you know, I was abandoned at the airport as a newborn at anywhere from 3 to 10 days old. And I was adopted by my parents, who are white. I had a Native American and Hispanic brother who was about 10 months older than me, who was also adopted, and grew up in a very white, I was the only person of color I knew until seventh grade. And I wrote a letter to the Cosby Show, because I wanted them to teach me, because they were the only Black people I knew, and they never responded. Rude, but rude. But I learned so much about race and racism from the time I was very young. And I grew up in rural Nevada, and rural Nevada, racism is not just tolerated, it is just ingrained in kind of the culture of rural societies, right? And communities, it used to be. And so I was very aware that I was Black, but I also didn't know exactly what races I was. So I had this big me board when I was little, and my mom and I would like go through magazines and cut people out, mostly National Geographic, from people from all over the world. And at the end, she was like, "These are your people." And I was like, "Mom, I was there when we cut them out of a magazine. I know they're not my people." And she said, "But yes, but look, you have his earlobes and you have her hair. Look how she dances. It's like you." And I would find all of these similarities and these commonalities. So from the time I was about 5, I started playing this game called I Wonder If We're Related. And I would find ways to be related to anyone in the world, of any race, of any background, because I could find enough commonalities. And I didn't know how rare that was until one day I was talking to my friend and I was like, "Yeah, I was at Starbucks and I was talking to the barista and she has the same taste, obscure taste in music. Like, I wonder if we're related." And she was like, "Okay, I've got to stop you. You say that pretty much every day." And I was like, "I know, isn't it crazy? The idea, like, you could be related to anyone." And she looked at me and she's like, No, most of us know we're not related to everyone or anyone." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's different." So I was like, "Well, so what did you think the first time you met me?" And she was like, "Oh my gosh, I saw your hair and your skin's the perfect color and this and this and this." And I was like, "You literally just named every way we're different. That's everything we don't have in common." And she was like, "Well, what did you think?" And I said, "I mean, I noticed that you had this floral pleated skirt. I have one that's similar. You were wearing a yellow top. Yellow is my favorite color. I wonder if we're related." And so I have always just looked at the world very differently. Like I look for commonalities in everyone and can somehow arrive at the conclusion, well, we must be related. And since we're related, I need to pardon you for all of your flaws because we're family and accept you for who you are. Like, that's really just kind of how I look at life. But in rural Nevada, that wasn't always easy. I have been chased through meadows, you know, by guys and white supremacists and pickup trucks. And I remember one time I was like in second or third grade and I was like running through the meadow as these white supremacists were chasing me. And I was like, "If I can just get to the forest, I'll be safe because nobody can hide in the forest like I can. Like, I know my way around the forest." And so I've always been aware of race. I've always been aware of racism. I remember the first time I asked my mom, "Mom, what does nigger mean?" I was in second grade and I came home and my mom, the pain in her face hurt me so deeply, so much more than the word. Seeing my mom's pain hurt me so badly. And I know now that, you know, she was sad, A, because I was called that, B, I was going to be called that again and she can't protect me every time. But personally, I think what hurt her the most was, as a mother, you just want to be able to say, "I understand. Here's what I do when that happens to me," you know, to offer that wisdom from experience. And my mom is never going to be called that. I have two white parents. And for that reason alone, I know that racism hurts white people. I know that racism hurts people from other races. I know that racism is this kind of great equalizer and that none of us are immune to it or its pain. So I think when I look at racism, I really try to look at it from all angles, you know, and to really step into the other person's shoe and understand what they're experiencing, because it's so incredibly painful. And in high school, I was, my high school was brutal. Like my freshman year, I'd ask my parents to go to school in the inner city, and they're like, no, there's a high school down the street. You're going to go to that one. And there were a lot of white supremacists at that school. And they wore white power coats, and they hung nooses on my locker and carved swastikas in my locker, and would come to my track practice and throw rocks at me and yell, run, nigger, run, like, which is not nice.
Oh my God. And, to say the least. Like,
and I personally don't care for having rocks thrown at me while I'm running. But
and
also,
I'll also throw out there, you know, Liz really makes it feel very lighthearted when she talks about this stuff. But I know from, you know, just being friends with her and having conversations with her, how much this all really affects her. She takes a lighthearted approach when she's talking about it. But this is stuff that I know has really affected her life and really made her the person who she is.
I'm just speechless. I'm so sorry. I've never met anybody that this has happened to before, so this is a first for me.
And that hurts my heart, because I've watched people, in a sense, lose their innocence when they hear a story like this from somebody they actually know and they can make that connection. And that, my heart hurts for you, because I know how difficult that is.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, when I talk about it, I have to kind of keep it at a surface with all of my defense mechanisms in place, or I'll just crumble and spiral. But it was, you know, it's really hard to live in that kind of fear every single day. And every day these guys would surround me and threaten to put me in ICU and, you know, beat me and rape me and do every awful thing you could think of. And there would be moments of courage / foolishness where I would mouth off back and say, you know, you don't have to jump me. One of you could take me on by yourself. Like, I don't know why you have to threaten me. But for the most part, I lived in just a very real sense of fear and terror, which later became one of the cornerstones for, I was diagnosed with PTSD, and this is the racial tensions and the racial really torment that I endured is actually one of the cornerstones of my PTSD. But I had a class with a biology class where the teacher thought it would be, I don't know, appropriate, interesting, whatever, to put me in an assigned seat across from one of the white supremacists. And every day he would just, you know, you effing nigger and this. And finally one day, like, I'd worked up the courage. I was like, can I just ask you something? And he was like, your nigger mind can't understand anything. And I was like, okay, well, I'd still like to ask it. And he, you know, cussed me out. And so I didn't ask any more that day. And then, you know, every day I would just work up the courage. Like, can I ask you something? And finally one day I was like, you know, I'm just going to ask it. And I said, you know, you hate me. I just want to understand your perspective. You hate me because the outermost layer of my epidermis is brown, right? And he was like, yep. And I was like, okay. So for that theory to hold water, if your leader, Jason, fell in mud, technically you'd have to hate him until he washed it off, because the outermost layer of his epidermis would be brown. And he looks at me and he was like, fuck you, nigger. And I was like, okay. And that was all we said that day. And that was on a Monday. And then Friday, without even looking up, he's doing his work, doesn't make eye contact. And he was like, my theory doesn't hold water. And that was all we said that day. And I was like, okay, but he didn't call me a slur. Okay. And what that turned into was a genuine friendship. We talked, we asked questions, we sought understanding. I never told him he was wrong. I never told him he was stupid. I never asked him to change his mind. What I did was I starved his stereotype of what he thought I was going to be, or what he was afraid I was going to be, or what he had decided I was going to be. And he changed his own mind on his terms in his time. He did a stint as a lawyer with the ACLU. He's now an entrepreneurial lawyer. So he probably makes more money now, but, and I asked him one time, I was like, Shane, there are two other Black kids in the school and you guys torment me more than anybody. Why is that? And he was like, well, you can't blame a nigger for laying with another nigger, but I can blame someone who's not a nigger for laying with a nigger. You're the product of race mixing. We hate you more than anyone. I was like, oh, okay. Like, thank you for that insight, because it made sense if I was looking at life from his perspective. As a white supremacist, I understand why they hate people of mixed race, because it's diluted the pure homogeneous makeup that they love so much. Whereas racism in the South is very different. It's where, you know, the darker you are, the more you're targeted. So it's this complex issue that has so many layers to it. But he became one of my greatest teachers and taught me so much about race and racism and the importance of acceptance and belonging and validating his experience, because what he was saying, his truth, it's a big world and his truth deserves space too. I didn't have to agree with it, but I freed myself as a freshman in high school. It's not my job to change anyone's mind. It's my job to share my perspective, share what I know, and let them do with that what they want. And he chooses to fight against injustice now, not because I forced it down his throat, but because he changed his mind.
Charzad, I see you're going very natural with your hair and I like it.
Thank you, Susan. It's Pros. I owe my good hair to Pros. Pros creates customized hair care products for people. It's really great. You fill out this little survey. It takes a couple minutes. It asks you all these kind of unique questions to figure out what your hair type is. And then they suggest products that are perfect for you. And I love it. It smells so good. You know, I wasn't one of those kids that like could go to the souvenir shop and find my name on a souvenir, because my name is Charzad and that was never available. It was always Susan or Michael or something like that. And I really like that my little my bottles of Pros have my name on them.
Yeah,
because
they're
made special for me.
They're made special for you. They have over 50 billion formula combinations, and the result is a unique blend of ingredients that cater to your every strand and follicle. And I like that because we all have different hair needs.
Pros stands by clean and responsible beauty. Every formula is sustainably sourced and cruelty-free, and they can even accommodate any preference, like vegan or gluten-free. You get to choose your fragrance, which I love.
Or no fragrance if you don't want
one. Or no fragrance, right? I chose fragrance because I like fragrance. Every single bottle is made to order, and you get guaranteed optimal freshness. I love my little hair kit that was designed. I got 4 pieces, a pre-shampoo, a shampoo, conditioner, and a hair oil, and I'm really pumped about all of them.
Pros is a healthy hair regimen with your name all over it, Charzad, if you want it. Take your free in-depth hair quiz and get 15% off your first order today. Go to pros.com/fam, that's PROSE.com/FAM, for your free in-depth hair quiz and 15% off.
The other, I think, the most interesting experience I ever had with racism. I was with our friend. Her name is Evangelina. She was Miss Montana our year. And she now lives in Las Vegas. And she's one of my dear friends. And we were in a small town outside of Las Vegas. And she was like, all right, let's go into this cafe. And I was like, oh, Evangelina, this is not really a place where I get out of the car. And she was like, you're being ridiculous. Let's go. Let's go. And I was like,
what she's not saying is Evangelina's very white. She's as white as you get.
Yeah, she's very white. She's from Montana.
Wait, and you were there too?
I was not there. Oh. No.
No, I was with my two white friends. And I was like, guys, I'm not welcome in cities, in towns like this. And they were like, you're being ridiculous. Let's go. And I was like, okay, this isn't going to end well, but okay. And we went in the cafe and I saw the two guys with the shaved heads and the leather jackets and the swastikas and the SS all over and the iron crosses. Like, I saw them immediately. They didn't. They toddled in, they sat down with their back to them. And after 10 minutes, they were like, you know, why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you ordering? And I was like, just listen. And they're quiet for a second. And they're like, listen to what? And I was like, I'll be more specific. Listen to what the two skinheads behind you are saying. And it was just in time for them to be like, that fucking nigger, this is our fucking road. We want to keep it white. What the fuck is her nigger ass doing in here? If we dragged her nigger ass up the street, maybe it would be send a clear message. Niggers aren't welcome. I mean, just this tirade. And she was like, oh, I'm going to say something. I was like, no, you're not. And she was like, what? And I said, Evangelina, what we're going to do now is we're going to get the check and we're going to leave. You guys walk in the front, I'll walk in the back, because if they're going to come at us, they're going to, I want them to hit me and not you. We're going to get in the truck. I'll drive. I know how to get away from people like this. We're going to be okay. And once we're safe, the answer is yes. You can ask me every uncomfortable question you have. So we did. Thankfully, they didn't chase us. And, you know, we pulled over and had a really authentic, honest conversation about race and racism. And I called her a couple of weeks ago and I was like, Evangeline, can you tell me how that affected your view of racism? And she was like, well, it didn't. Like, I've always known that racism was disgusting. What hurt like hell was realizing how oblivious I am to it. You told us you were not welcome. You told us that we shouldn't go in, and we knew better and we insisted on it. You noticed them immediately. We didn't notice the two skinheads. You sat there and you heard that language. I didn't hear it. Even when you told me to listen, I still didn't hear it. You had to tell me what I was listening for, and then I could hear it. And then when I wanted to react, you told me that was wrong. And then you told me that if they were to hit you, not to try to save you, because they would hit me too. And you were right. Their friends could get there faster than ours could. And then I couldn't even, you wouldn't even let me drive. Like, there was nothing I could contribute to that. And that hurt like hell. And she said, and that's privilege. And I was talking to her and I was like, you know, you're right. I've never had a definition for white privilege, privilege in general. I said, but you're right. You have never had to feel unsafe strictly because of your skin color. And you have never had to be hyper aware of all of these potential threats because either you could avoid them if there are safe places you don't feel safe, but I can't. And most people would say, well, you grew up with white privilege. And I was like, I can, yeah, I grew up with two white parents, upper middle class, they're married, I'm educated, they're educated. I still get called a nigger. And that is where white privilege stops and my journey begins. There's nothing, and racism isn't based on socioeconomics. Last month, I got chased up this main road in Las Vegas by this guy in a pickup truck that had this big Confederate flag. And he was like, fuck you, nigger, I'm going to fuck you up. My kids are in the back seat. And so I'm driving up the street and I was like, all right, boys, you know, tighten your buckles. Mommy has to drive a little bit faster than I normally would. And Eli was like, my oldest son, Eli, he's six, was like, mommy, why is he yelling? Like, what does that mean? And I said, remember, we've had this talk about people who choose to hate somebody because they look different. This says more about him than it says about us. Right now, mommy's job is making sure we're safe. And he was like, Eli was like, well, how do I help? How do I be a helper? And I was like, what? What's, and I'm driving, I'm like, what's that? What'd you say, hon? And
trying to be cool. We're cool here. We're not going to panic.
Because I can't let them, I don't want them to feel my fear. Because I'm terrified, but I don't want them to be scared too. And we've had the talk, and I'm like, guys, right now, mommy's got to focus on I have to get us safe. I have to get us safe. But what's that? What'd you say? And he was like, you know, how do I be a helper? He said, you said we always have to be helpers. And I said, I did say that. Right now, the best way you can help mommy, hold your brother's hand and let's make sure that everybody feels brave. That's what we do right now. And so that's racism. You know, that it's that idea of knowing that no matter what I do, who I am, choices I've made, I'm still going to get called things that are awful. I'm still going to be threatened. I'm still going to have to drive my truck up the road quickly as I'm trying to escape this guy who's threatening me while my sons are in the car. I still have to show my receipt at Target, even though nobody else does. And the cashier has to say, I'm so sorry. My manager is asking to see your receipt. She wouldn't ask you if you look different. I'm so sorry. And I have to bite my tongue and say, I'd be happy to show you my receipt. my boys are right here and I need to show them that this is how we act in the face of racism. And that is why it's so hard to talk about it, because I'm not somebody who backs down from fights, and I'm not somebody who folds when it gets hard. But when I face racism, I have to fold because I don't want to die. And I have to flee up the street because I don't want my boys to be hurt. And I have to show the receipt because I don't want them to call the cops and I get sent to jail for actually paying for everything I bought. And they're ashamed of that. The concessions that we have to make every day to live in a world where we're different. I'm not proud of that, but that's the reality. When we are angry, we have to speak a little softer so we don't get fired. There are a lot of things we have to do differently, and it sucks. And my boys at 5 and 6, they know if they ever get pulled up, and it's this balance, right? Because I don't want them to fear law enforcement. And they know that law enforcement are the helpers and that if they're ever in trouble, they should look for them. But they also know if an officer stops them, big arms, big fingers. Big arms are where you extend your arms as far as you can so they can see, and big fingers, you spread your fingers as far as you can so they can see you don't have anything in them. My boys learn that at 3 and 4. And we will continue to practice it as long as I'm alive, because it's what's going to keep them safe. And I think that's a really hard time. It's a hard time for things like this right now. And we're having to have some hard conversations. And I think as mothers, we have such a responsibility. And people always ask, how do you talk to your kids about this? We watched the movie Zootopia, which is an amazing movie that talks about stereotypes and assumptions, racism, discrimination, bigotry, prejudice. It's such a wonderful movie that puts it in ways that kids can understand. So we've been talking about racism for a long time, but the one thing, to be honest, we're never going to end racism. And I love the idea. I love that everybody talks about it. It's not going to happen. We are seeing a tide, and I think it's been a trend for a long time. There are going to be more anti-racists, and there are more anti-racists than there are racists. But racists are going to keep reproducing and sharing their truths with their children just as we are with ours. So it's never going to end. But, I always tell my kids, listen, guys, there are going to be people that choose to hate or dislike or be mean or treat somebody cruelly in ways that aren't kind simply because they're different. That difference could be skin color. It could be because they have curly hair. It could be because they have braces, glasses. When that happens, your job is not necessarily to go after the person doing the hurting. Your job is to help the person on the receiving end and make sure it's easier for them. Make sure they're not standing alone. Make sure that they know that they have a friend. That is how you be a helper. And I think it's that message as a parent of always saying, yes, there will be bad. You will be the good. That's your job. And that's your only choice. And Eli, my older one, my younger one has more, he's just scrappy. And my youngest son would say, well, I think what I would do is I would take him and I would put a Lego in his ear. And then and he has this game plan for what he would do with racists if given a chance. And I have to say, but I love that spirit. And I said, but if you become what they think you are, we'll never change minds that way. You have to starve stereotypes. And if I go back to Zootopia, look at Nick Wilde. He was a fox, but if people thought they couldn't trust him, he was honest. He didn't tell lies. And all of these little things that you have to do if we're ever going to really end or really create helpers in this world is not teaching them that it doesn't exist and that there's no such thing as colors and that everyone's the same, because we're not. It's saying, yes, we're different. There are going to be differences. People are going to dislike some of those differences. Your job is to be the helper. Your job is to make sure that the person on the receiving end knows they're not alone. That's your job. And So that's why Eli was asking how he could be a helper as we're being chased up the street. But it's, racism is a hard and layered and complex issue, but it's through these spaces of authentic communication, right? And Shahrzad, now that you know somebody who has experienced racism like this, you now have the very powerful responsibility of taking my experience with racism and telling this story in rooms that I'm not welcome in. There are just tables that you are going to have a seat at where I will never be invited to, or if I said it, it would be dismissed. That's now your job. And we all have that job for somebody. I have to call my friends who are usually in a different socioeconomic bracket and saying, what is it that you want me to say? What can I translate to my audience? And that's where people, like, I feel so helpless. I'm like, no, you're anything but. You've got the most powerful job right now, is you're the translator. You get to take this message in rooms that create change, because they won't listen to me. And my friends, they know that we all have that same burden. But that's how change happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to share these perspectives and these truths, and it's not easy.
Yeah.
And I know it's heartbreaking. I remember Evangelina's face when we were driving out of that town and the tears were falling. It's really, really hard to see somebody lose their innocence.
Susan?
Yes?
Is Isla eating solids yet?
She is such a good eater, and I'll tell you, we got her started on Little Spoon because we wanted to start with purees. She got started earlier than Nikosh because she was approved for solids at 4 months, but the thing that her pediatrician pointed out was that she needed purees. I just don't have the time to sit there, you know, cooking for her, steaming all the food, and then pureeing it on top of it. It seems like it's really easy, but it takes up a good amount of your time. So I found Little Spoon, and I was really excited about it because Little Spoon's baby food is always made in small batches, so you're basically getting super high quality homemade food. So it took that place for me. And then they use over 100 USDA certified organic ingredients in a rotating menu of flavors and textures. I actually love that you can go onto the website every week and you choose what you want the menu to be. So I really got to introduce all these different flavors to her. And it wasn't just, you know, choosing the easiest fruits and vegetables to introduce into her life. It was introducing a variety of foods to her.
What a child eats in his or her first years of life is critical to their healthy development. 65% of nutrients babies consume in their first 2 years go straight to your baby's growing brain, bones, muscles, eyesight, digestion, you name it. So what you're feeding your babe really does matter, but no more worrying about what's in your baby's food. Let Little Spoon take one thing off your very big parenting to-do list and cover mealtime with their fresh organic blends. Get 20% off your first three orders at littlespoon.com/fam. That's littlespoon.com/FAM.
I think we, you know, Shahrzad, we also live in a bubble, right? Like, Elizabeth lives in Nevada. She lives in Las Vegas, which is kind of its own bubble as well, but she didn't grow up in Las Vegas. And, you know, I grew up in New Mexico, wherever it's actually predominantly Latino, but there are also, you know, the things that you have to experience within, you know, certain cultural places, right? But it's funny because we live in a bubble in Los Angeles, and we sometimes forget that this still exists. Every once in a while we'll see it, but it's not overtly out there like it is in certain places, and we forget. And in some ways I think we avoid, right? But I think it's really important to have these conversations. And, you know, just even, you know, somebody I posted the other day on Instagram, I posted something, I reshared it, where it said, I was going to take a pledge that any kind of sponsorships I get, they're going to have a writer in these contracts that say they are going to participate in inclusion, right? And somebody DM'd me and she was like, even if they're not qualified? And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, all of us have to find some opportunity, right? And it's on us to then prove ourselves. But the problem is Black people don't get the opportunity to prove themselves. So we need to be able to give them those opportunities too. And she was like, wow, that's a good point. You know, and this is what happens. This is still what is happening. And I think if there's anything, you know, to really take away from everything that's happening. And when I've taken a step back to self-reflect and to, you know, Liz and I have had so many conversations about everything happening over the last couple of weeks. And I've even had to learn to just take a step back, reflect a little bit, and realize I'm not doing the most that I can do too.
Liz, I found myself getting so emotional listening to you. I just, obviously what stands out to me is that you've remained so calm. It seems like this from high school on, getting, you know, so much hatred straight in your face. And I just don't think I would have ever been able to handle it the way that you did. And I'm so impressed with you. I mean, I've never really known somebody, or I certainly have never talked to anybody about the kind of racism that you've experienced before. And it's, you know, it always just shocks me because I, you know, maybe I did grow up in this little bubble of the Bay Area with like hippie parents that were super open-minded and had friends of every color and walk of life. And I always thought like, yeah, I celebrate diversity. I'm mixed. My mom was mixed. Like I come from a melting pot, but I've never really, I guess, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's like you, when it's not in your face, you don't think about it. And when somebody seems happy, you don't realize what they've gone through. And what they continue to go through. I am so paranoid of like saying the wrong thing and saying something fucking stupid that I find myself just wanting to shut up.
And that's what's so important when I have these discussions. Like it's a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
And that's so critical because I've been on the other side of that. You know, in middle school, there was this group of girls that tried to jump me. And, you know, every day they would try to jump me. And luckily I'm a fast runner. One day I finally, I was like, what's the deal? Wait, why do you guys want to jump me? Like, what is the deal? Why do you hate me so much? I'm like, you think you're white. And I was like, I'm the only Black person I've ever known. You really think I'm not painfully aware that I'm not white? I know I'm Black. I don't know anyone. I don't have anyone that teaches me what that means. My entire family is white. My brother's Mexican and Indian. I don't have anyone that shows me. I wrote the Cosby Show. They didn't write me back. And these girls, I was like, will you teach me? And at first they thought I was kidding. And I was like, I don't have anyone else to ask. And to their credit, they did. These girls who wanted to jump me took me under their wing. And I had this notebook full of questions that I've had. It was my notebook where I kept track of every Black person I ever saw. Like I was like, ooh, Scolari's grocery store, saw a Black man buy the milk, just in case we were related. I would have my record of it in my log. But I had these questions, so many questions that I'm sure sounded stupid. And at first they would kind of laugh. And I was like, I don't have anyone to ask. How do we dance? How do we say this? How do we dress? What do we put in our hair? What kind of makeup do we wear? I mean, so many things that nobody ever taught me. Where do we go to church? What songs do we sing? How do we sing them? What do they sound like? What do we do on certain holidays? What are the holidays? There were so, and these girls took me under their wing. They took me to their homes, their family reunions, their churches, their celebrations, everything. And they taught me everything they could about being Black. Like I knew I was Black and I knew I was certainly persecuted for being Black, but I didn't know, I had no context for what any of that meant. I didn't have any teachers. So I've been on that uncomfortable side of asking stupid questions, but I genuinely wanted to know. And I think that as long as the intent is there, that you genuinely want to have a better understanding, you should feel no, like extend yourself mercy. You have to do that. Because again, if we don't have anyone else to teach us, how the heck are we supposed to learn? You know, so I say, don't shut up, ask the questions, because how else are you going to know? And I've been on that side. I had to ask. And then once they were done, they sent me to the Mexican, the Cholas took me in and they showed me their culture. And then the Indians, my friend who owned an Indian restaurant, they took me in. Showed me their culture. And I learned all of the Samoans, the Pacific Islanders, the Tongans, the Hawaii, like all of these groups, El Salvadorians, Guatemalan. I mean, all of these different groups took me in and taught me everything about their culture. I'm like, yeah, I could be related to you guys.
Yeah. And you guys, that just a reminder, this stems back from Elizabeth was adopted. So she didn't know her ethnic makeup. And so
no,
I think there's
3 years ago.
Yeah, till 3 years ago, which is a whole other story that we'll bring her back on for fam.
You have to come back when we can see each other in person. This, yeah. I, I went through such an emotional roller coaster ride listening to you, from tears to like blood fucking boiling to just being in awe of everything that you said and how you're saying it and how calmly you're saying it and how you're raising your kids. I mean, I've had conversations with Idris, who's six, not so much Cyrus yet because he's three, about racism. And I want to be so mindful that I raise anti-racist kids. And I truly feel like my parents raised me to be anti-racist. But if you could give any advice, like, and how we could do better, you know, please let me know.
I mean, I think all of us who are non-racist are doing the right things, because we're teaching our kids that A, racism is real and racism is wrong. The one thing I always tell Eli is, just because it's not happening to you doesn't mean it's not happening. Because I think it's really easy to dismiss experiences that aren't happening directly to you. So he knows that. And I think that's really important. Just because it's not happening to you doesn't mean it's not happening. To the person that it's happening to, you need to make it easier. That's your job. Make sure they're not alone. Because if people had been raised that way, I don't know that people would have been videoing the different police-related deaths so much as they would have been ensuring that the person on the receiving end knew they were not alone and that somebody had their back and that they, you know. So I think those lessons are so critical, and they're going to look to us to be the example.
Right.
So we have to preach it. We have to live it and celebrate differences.
I'm all about that. I think you can, I don't know. I mean, I love celebrating diversity. I really, really do. I think that's when you have the most interesting conversations. That's when you get to learn. That's when you get to eat interesting food. That's why we travel. That's, you know, I think that's a blast. I mean, we are both products, and you obviously too, Elizabeth, of mixing things up and being
diversity,
you know, celebrating diversity and differences and stuff. So, I mean, I'm obviously a fan of that, but this has been such an eye-opening conversation. Again, even for me, somebody who feels in my core like I'm anti-racist, I'm still just always shocked when I hear about racism being like very much alive and well. It's always just something that shocks me, because I just in my core don't fucking understand why you wouldn't like somebody because of the way that they look.
Well, and some of it's racism and some of it's just racial blind spots.
Yeah.
You know, we all have them, and it's not racist. It's just, there's certain things we can't identify with because it's not our experience. So rather than so what I think I'm calling for people to do is listen to that racial blind spot so you can see it rather than dismissing it. Because typically we say, well, I can't see it. It must not be real.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, you are an angel.
Well, I adore you. I love you so much.
I could listen to you talk all day. I feel like you have a TED Talk in your future.
Oh, because she's got 1,000 of them. And you guys, just so you know, she is working on something. She wrote a children's book not too long ago called Badges, because she's, again, a whole other experience with her first son, who was born with a congenital heart disease and has since then overcome it. It's amazing to see his progress and who he is now. So she wrote a book for children called Badges, and it's to help them be brave. Yeah. But she's also now working on another book. And I don't know, you want to give it to him before I start to take it for you?
Yeah. It has changed my life. It's called Swan Mode. And it's taking all of the like profound life lessons I learned through just extraordinary circumstances. For whatever reason, I've just had this crazy, extraordinary life that had these truly unique experiences from which I extracted these profound life lessons. And I'm sharing them in this book. And I, throughout the process, there were so many times I was like, just completely transformed by writing a chapter. And it's by far the most authentic and vulnerable I've ever been. And it's been met with such support and love, and it's pretty incredible, and I'm excited to share it with everybody.
Yeah.
Is it like a memoir? Or it's not a children's book?
It's not a memoir. It's more of a guide, I want to call it. I've been reading some of the chapters that she's let me read. and I think it's more of it's inspirational. It's a little bit of a guideline. You know, when she told me swan mode, I was kind of like, why swan? Mm-hmm. And she explained it to me. It's like, you know, we've lived in this rat race where we're trying to always like keep up and never just gliding through everything. And she was like, if you look at the way a swan carries themselves.
We're told every day to be like ducks, right?
Yep.
Paddle like crazy under the surface, but look calm. That kills us. because we are peddling like crazy. We're like, oh, so you don't want me to cry, sweat, or ask for help? Awesome. You know, that's just not realistic. And so swans don't do that. They don't peddle like crazy. They move faster through water than any other waterfowl, but they do it by simply moving one leg deliberately and strategically rather than peddling like crazy. That is swan mode. There has to be a better way.
Yeah. And this is for moms. I mean, this is for everybody, but I really think that she's speaking to moms when she's writing about this stuff, because mm-hmm. that is, I mean, gosh, when we look
too
at,
much.
Yeah, we really take on too much, but we're expected to look mm-hmm. like everything's cool. We've got this.
Yep. Don't cry. Don't ask for help. Don't you dare sweat. And don't you dare admit that it's hard. Don't you dare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are a powerhouse.
She is. She is. I can't wait.
I can't wait to see all the things you do. Where can people get your children's book?
Well, the children's book is on Amazon, right? We'll leave a link to that.
Oh, cool.
We'll leave a link to the badges. Yeah. You can follow her on Instagram. Is it Swan Mode now, or do you want people following you on your personal?
Yeah, probably on my personal. I mean, they can do either. I'm not great with either one.
I'm working with her. I'm working with her.
Good.
She's got the stories. I've got the marketing
Elizabeth,
experience.
I don't even think I follow you on Instagram. I didn't know. I see you on Facebook. I didn't. I'm a bad girl. That's going to change in 2 seconds.
I'm going to follow you. I'm learning Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beast.
Yeah. We'll give you everybody in the description box. We'll leave her Instagram handle for you to follow Elizabeth and encourage her to put these stories out there, because I think they're all meaningful and there's so many lessons.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. I hope this for you was maybe like a little baby therapy session. You feel lighter maybe, or maybe not so much.
No, it's always therapy. And when you're talking to women who accept you for who you are, it's like, it doesn't get any better than that. So thank you for giving women a space to be authentic and admit this is freaking hard.
I love you. I'll text you probably in a little while.
All right.
I love you too. I love you too.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.